I believe all of us are keenly aware that God does not look at things the way we do. There is a fundamental distinction between what the Bible emphasizes and what man sees and what man thinks. In 1 Samuel chapter 16 and verse 7, whenever the prophet went to the household of Jesse, he looked for the biggest, strongest, handsomest man he could find to be the next king over the nation of Israel. But God said, "Do not look at his appearance or at the height of his stature." Why? Well, the Lord does not see as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. There are many times we forget this important principle that is laid down here, and consequently we judge ourselves, and sometimes we judge others by looking only at the outside. But a question arises when we think about this, and that is, does God care what you look like on the outside? Does it matter what you wear? Now, is it possible to always, in every circumstance, judge a person's character by looking at what they're wearing? Well, fundamentally, I think the answer would be no. Not always. You certainly can't change a person's character, however, by dressing them differently. Or can you? I think the Bible teaches us that God cares how we dress. The Bible speaks about proper and improper clothing. In fact, the Scriptures even assign certain types of clothing to certain types of people or certain characters. Whenever we talk about clothing and character, in the 7th chapter of the book of Proverbs, the wise man describes a naive young man who is out walking the streets at night and is met by a woman with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. Her clothing was an index to her character and her intent. So, even in today's open-minded society, as it fancies itself, we recognize that the traits or characteristics associated with certain types of clothing are things that we understand and accept. And it would follow, therefore, that God would be concerned with what we wear, because he certainly cares about our influence on others and our character as it is perceived by others. But you say, well, now you talk about the Bible. What does the Bible have to say on this subject anyway? What does the Bible teach us about apparel? Well, it's interesting to note that the very first chapters of the Bible deal with the very subject that we're talking about. From creation, we learn that clothing was not necessary until man acquired the knowledge of good and evil. With the acquisition of knowledge of good and evil came the universal prohibition against nakedness. From the very beginning, God has prohibited the exposure of the human body. After their consciences were awakened, that is, Adam and Eve's consciences were awakened of sin, they immediately became aware of their nakedness. immediately. In Genesis 3, verses 6 and 7, remember the woman saw the tree was good for food and pleasant to the eyes, and a tree desirable to make one wise. And she took of its fruit and ate, and gave to her husband, and he ate. And the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew they were naked. And so they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves coverings. Now some versions render that aprons. Now what does this say? This says that their nakedness was not consistent with the moral consciousness that was awakened in them. Think about that. And even after clothing themselves with coverings or aprons, what do we find out? Well, we found out they were ashamed and still attempted to hide themselves from God. But let's talk about this word covering here, or apron. I'm not going to attempt to pronounce that, but that's the Hebrew word. It means a garment that covers the midsection of the body, tied about the waist. The same word is translated in other passages as girdle or belt. Apron is described as a minimal item of clothing, perhaps an undergarment, probably formed originally by wrapping material around the lower trunk. Well, this gives us some idea of what we're talking about whenever it says they made for themselves coverings or aprons of fig leaves. Later, after God drove them from the garden and he imposed punishment for their sin, we find out that God clothed them in Genesis 3 and verse 21. The Lord made tunics of skin and clothed them. Now, what does this indicate? Well, it indicates that in God's way of seeing things, their aprons were not sufficient to cover their nakedness. The Hebrew word for tunic is another one that I'm not going to try to pronounce here, but it is one that describes a shirt that hangs on the shoulders and reaches to the knees, sometimes to the ankles. It is from an unused root, meaning to cover. It is translated as a tunic, sometimes undergarment, and it is translated a long shirt-like garment, usually of linen. These are the various ways that this is translated according to Strong's. Now, in a description of this in Wilson's Old Testament Word Studies, he says that a tunic is worn next to the skin, generally with sleeves to the knees, but seldom to the ankles. In other words, as a rule, it was to the knees. Okay? Now, God's thinking on the subject that we're talking about can be seen clearly in the priest's garments. Looking at Exodus 28 and verse 40, down through verse 43, we find God's direction to make tunics or coats and sashes or girdles for Aaron's sons who were to be the priests. Looking down at verse 42, notice here, you shall make for them trousers to cover their nakedness. And what does he say? These shall reach from the waist to the thighs. And they shall be on Aaron and on his sons when they come into the tabernacle of meeting, or when they come near the altar to minister in the holy place, that they do not incur iniquity and die. It shall be a statute forever to him and his descendants after him. Now, this is interesting. Whatever these trousers are here, their purpose was to cover their nakedness. To cover their nakedness. Trousers, or as they're called in some versions, breeches, of the high priest are something similar to what we have in the drawing before you. The Hebrew word actually means underwear, drawers, or trousers. It is a priestly garment of undergarment of linen, according to Brown, Driver, and Briggs. It is a garment extending from the waist to or just below the knee or to the ankle and covering each leg separately. In other words, it was not a robe, but it was pants, as we would call it, okay? Covering each leg separately. The priests were forbidden by the law to place altars at the top of steps because the nakedness of the worshipers would be exposed as they approached it if they had to walk up steps. The priest, symbolic of God's holiness, wore trousers under their tunic. Why? Lest their nakedness be exposed. Now, what about the Israelites? The Israelites understood that the naked body was a sign of shamefulness because of its association with sexuality. The body was not to be exposed except for the intimacy of the marriage relationship. In Leviticus chapter 18, the term uncover nakedness refers to taking another in marriage. In the negative context, it came to refer to harlotry and lewdness, as in Ezekiel 16 and verse 37. Teaching concerning the nakedness of the body was never, let me emphasize, never restricted to women. Never restricted to women. God's law never sanctioned or even mentioned a distinction between sexuality and the exposure of the body or nudity, nakedness, as exists in the minds of many people today. Many people think that nakedness is permissible for artistic purposes or in the performance of athletics or other activities such as dancing and so forth. No such thing in the Bible. No such thing. The biblical concept of nakedness equals what? The concept of total humiliation or debasement. That's what the Bible teaches. Notice in Isaiah chapter 47 and verse 3, your nakedness shall be uncovered, your shame will be seen. Lamentations 1 and verse 8, she has become vile. They have seen her nakedness. And New Testament, the shame of your nakedness. Now, these are not talking about physical, literal nakedness, but rather they are being used to describe the shame that is associated with being exposed or being naked. Now, someone says, well, just exactly what is nakedness now? You know, everybody has a different view on this. I believe that few of us, if any, would even try to sanction the nudist and probably condemn nakedness in that sense, for sure. But as we have seen, the word that is translated naked or nakedness did not always refer to no clothing at all. Remember God's actions in Genesis chapter 3 indicate that the fig leaves did not cover their nakedness. Now here we're learning a lesson from God. The fig leaves did not cover their nakedness. It is possible then to be partially clothed and still guilty of nakedness. Look at John 21 and verse 7. We're told here that Peter was unwilling to appear before Jesus until he had covered himself, for he was naked, the King James says. What did he do? He put on his outer garment to cover himself. Now, most think that they have to take off their clothes to go in the water. But Peter understood that he was not properly covered. And the nakedness that God prohibits today is not just being totally unclothed. What is it then? Well, it involves the inappropriate exposure of the body that brings shame upon the person. It is like the attire of a harlot. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that everybody who is scantily clad is a harlot. That's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is the way that you dress or undress, as the case may be, put you in a category that you don't want to be in sometimes as a Christian. New Testament principles are very important when it comes to talking about this subject. Many Christians seem to have a problem getting a handle on what the New Testament teaches about modest clothing. Now, this may be because God doesn't give us a list of proper and improper clothing. I think people are looking for that, and they can't find it. But to practice what God desires, we must use the intellect with which God has blessed us to apply the principles that He has revealed to specific occasions and maybe even specific cultures. And it may be that those who have trouble with this may lack discernment, or they may just be too lazy to try to put it into action. Recognize that the New Testament speaks to us in principle rather than specific precepts. And that doesn't mean that we cannot make specific applications of things or come to definite conclusions on that which is right and wrong. In fact, we have just concluded that it has always been wrong to expose our bodies by simply reading the Scriptures. We've seen that clearly. And there is no biblical way to justify such things as the bikini and other inappropriate clothing, regardless of the circumstance. People can be clothed and still be immoral. No question about it. There is direct teaching on proper apparel in Paul's teaching to Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 2. Now, the context of this is extremely important. Paul is giving admonition that pertains to holiness of character. Holiness of character. Verse 8, he commands men everywhere to lift up holy hands in prayer. God was not just interested in getting these men to lift up their hands when they prayed. That wasn't the point. Their hands needed to be holy when they prayed. What does he mean? The issue was character. The issue was their character. Then in verses 9 and 10, he specifically talks about the women and their attire. He says, in like manner also, that the women adorn themselves in modest apparel with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair, gold or pearls or costly clothing, but, which is proper for women professing godliness, with good works. Now, a couple of other translations American Standard Version, that women adorn themselves in modest apparel with shame, fastness, and sobriety. New American Standard Bible, women adorn themselves with proper clothing, modestly and discreetly. A little different wording, but teaching the same thing. Now, again, the issue is not just the outward clothing, but it is the character that is reflected in the clothing. That's extremely important. Extremely important. Godly women will dress godly. That's the principle that he lays down. Now, take a closer look at the words that he gives us here that should guide us in the choices of clothing that is worn. And I believe these principal words apply to men and women both. And I think there are three words contained in this context of 1 Timothy 2, 9 and 10. Three words that we can dress by. The first one is modest. What do you think when someone uses the word modest? Or, more specifically, the negative, immodest. What do you think? Well, we either think of scanty clothing or not wearing enough clothes. But it is applicable to this with regard to the definition of the word. Orderly, well-arranged, decent, and honorable. Did you know that the antonym for the word modest, kosmios, is chaos? And that's exactly what the word implies. I'm sure all of us could think of some chaotic clothing we've seen, without a doubt. But the word of principle commands dress that is respected by others and not designed to draw attention to yourself. Did you get that? Not designed to draw attention to yourself. That's a very, very important principle with regard to modesty. Paul mentions here the braiding of hair and wearing of gold and pearls and costly clothing. What does he mean? This gaudiness. And, you know, if you've read anything about history, you have seen artist portrayals of people in various time periods when they were just absolutely off the wall gaudy. No question about it. What was their purpose? To draw attention to themselves. Paul says godly women don't do that. They don't do things to draw attention to themselves. This word, by its very definition, demands unpretentiousness. And it reflects an attitude that Peter describes in 1 Peter chapter 3. Oh, there it is. 1 Peter 3, verses 2 through 4. As being meek and quiet. Chaste conduct accompanied by fear. Do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing gold, putting on fine apparel. Rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. Certainly a principle to live by and to dress by. But the second one is propriety. Number two is propriety. The American Standard Version renders it shame, fastness. Literally, it is a sense of shame or reverence. A sense of shame or reverence. This principle presupposes the moral aspect of apparel. That is, the shame of nakedness. It presupposes that. And it rules out clothing that exposes the body to others, such as bathing suits and loose-fitting tops and so forth that allow yourself to be exposed. And Remember, I said, men and women. Applies to both. Now, what would you be ashamed to wear? I know that's a kind of a silly question when you think about it. There's a whole lot of things I'd be ashamed to wear. But a godly woman or a godly man should so despise sin that they would never want to dress in such a way that they might cause a lustful thought in another. Ever. The term lasciviousness, which we could spend a whole lesson on, or maybe a couple of lessons on, sometimes translated wantonness in the Scriptures, depicts not only the illicit lust that is sinful, but it also condemns anything that creates lust in another person. And that puts a real responsibility on us in how we choose our clothing. We need to think about it very carefully. The third word to dress by is moderation or sobriety. Literally, it means soundness of mind or self-control, being kept within bounds. The fact is, the long definition says a well-balanced state arising from habitual self-restraint. It's a pretty good definition. Paul uses this root word in Titus 2 and verse 5 when he tells the older women to teach the younger women to be discreet. This principle may prohibit overdressing, as we've been talking about. Judah was condemned for the gaudy dressing of its women in Isaiah chapter 3, verses 16 through 24. And of course, God did not approve of this. In Luke 17, verses 1 and 2, the Lord Jesus laid down a principle that we all need to be reminded of from time to time. And look at it carefully with me. It is impossible that no offenses should come, but woe to him through whom they do come. It would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were thrown into the sea than that he should offend one of these little ones. Did you get that? The way we dress, the way we conduct ourselves, if we cause someone to stumble and fall, we're guilty of this very thing. We're guilty of it. Now, if lust is sinful, and inadequate clothing can cause a person to lust, can we apply this passage here to our subject? Absolutely. Absolutely. The biblical fact is this. God cares how we dress. God cares how we dress. Not because God is superficial, and not because God is not concerned about our heart above all, but because God knows that our outward appearance may be indicative of our heart. Why do we look like this? Because that's the way our heart is. If our heart was otherwise, we wouldn't look like that. There is clothing that reflects a godly and submissive spirit. And there is clothing that is not chosen by the world and fashion designers. There is clothing that is chosen by those who live by God's principles for their lives, every day of their life, who want to please God more than anything else on this earth. And so as the heat comes on and the weather gets hot and the days get long and we see the world getting naked, don't join them. Don't join them. Be different. Be God's people. And don't let yourself be drawn into the world and try to justify what God calls nakedness. It is only to your shame.